good morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. Well, we're fortunate to have in the studio this morning our friend Carvin, and we're going to go through a bit of history of Jewish music. Is that right?
That's right. Shalom, John. Yeah, I'm actually talking a little bit about the great musical archivist, Moshe Beregovsky, who lived in the Soviet Union. He actually was the head of folkloric music at the Ukrainian Academy of Sciences, and he collected Jewish music and researched Jewish music across the board. But today we're mostly talking about klezmer. He found massive amounts of evidence of klezmer dating back to the Middle Ages and all of that. But we'll get to that in a moment. I just want to start us off with something a little fun. There's a Hasidim Tanz is the title of it. And this one is recorded by the Klezmer Conservatory Band in 1986 on Rounder Records. That was the Klezmer Conservatory Band playing Hasidim Tanz. And today we're talking about the music collected by the great Moshe Beregovsky. And as I mentioned before, Moshe did a great amount of work on the history of klezmer in addition to collecting literally thousands of melodies over the course of his career. And what he found, among other things, was that there was a great flowering of klezmer music at about the same time as Johann Sebastian Bach. And so I thought I'd give you a little example of what Baroque klezmer would have sounded like. So this is 18th century klezmer, and this piece is simply entitled Mazel Tov.
Thank you.
We just heard the Chicago Klezmer Ensemble playing a Mazel Tov from the Baroque era, from the 18th century. And just to kind of show you how long Klezmer's been around and how long it's been kind of blending the rich Jewish tradition with the music of its time and its place and remaining relevant to the world around it. Right now, we're listening to Brave Old World playing another Baroque klezmer piece called Dem Mikolas Nigun. And it kind of shows how, you know, klezmer developed over the years and just constantly kept in touch with its times. During the 19th century when... well, first of all, actually, before we get to that, let me just mention, in some of the writings of Moshe Beregovsky, about the music of this era, he told how the Jewish musicians had become so popular that the Christian music guilds had laws passed throughout Poland and much of Eastern Europe that forbade Jewish musicians from playing at Christian weddings. And this continued from 1582 until 1629. So for 50 years, no klezmorim were allowed to play at Jewish weddings. At Christian weddings, sorry, yes. But the outcry among the Christians became so great that they repealed the laws because the klezmorim were considered the greatest musicians of their areas. And so, so the outcry became great. They repealed the laws, and starting in the beginning of the 17th century, in 1629, Jewish musicians were allowed to play at any wedding and any function. And so, we've been listening to you know various pieces of wedding music, and so you know, bearing in mind that although this is Jewish wedding music, it was music that was played in weddings throughout the Eastern European world.
Right.
So, fast forwarding a little bit onward, you know, Jewish musicians were highly sought after in military bands because for their virtuosity, and so most Jewish service in the militaries of Eastern Europe and Russia were as musicians in their band. And so this is when you see the addition of cornets and clarinets and a lot of klezmer as we know it. And this was a great development in klezmer. And I think after that development, the next step became the development of recording. So from now, we're just going to fast forward to the beginning of the 20th century and hear Max Leibowitz playing Galicianer Chosid. that was, who was that? That was Max Leibowitz and his orchestra playing Galitianer Chusid. And that was a recording of music that was collected by Moshe Bergovsky, a Soviet era Jewish musicologist, who was really the man responsible for not just cataloging and doing scholarly research about Jewish music, but as we will see, he actually saved all of this music from complete destruction. His work from all these initial recordings that he made at the time and transcriptions and scholarly writings was interrupted by World War II, and after the war, he went back to the places where he had discovered all of this music and researched it, and discovered that a lot of these communities where the music came from had been completely destroyed by the Nazis. And so it's really thanks to Bergovsky's work that we have this music at all.
And how was it got out to the West if he was in trouble?
Well, it got out to the West very slowly. The only volume of his work, he did 10 volumes of work, and the only volume of his work that was published during his lifetime was a volume of folk songs and worker songs, as you can imagine, from the Soviet funding behind his work and his research. I mentioned that he was at the Academy of Sciences at Ukraine, and he used vast state resources
to do his research,
which I personally think is brilliant. And in doing so, unwittingly, the Stalinist government actually saved a large part of Jewish culture. And considering what Stalin did to the Jews, I think that it's only fair
that the heritage of the music lives on.
Yes, exactly, and it's only fair that that Stalin is part of who paid for this heritage to live on. Bergovsky was imprisoned in 1950 during the Stalin anti-government sweeps, and which is when you read Bergovsky's work, you see that a lot of his musicology does, he constantly tries to bring in, that this is folk music, but then he'll mention that, except that most Jewish musicians were professionals, and this is folk music that comes from the people, but the people were Jewish. He tries to include as much Soviet bias as he can stomach. But at one point, you see in his writings that he has a complete break with the prevailing Soviet viewpoint, and it's things like this that you can see how he really got himself in trouble because he couldn't stand working in the Soviet system. Let me just read an excerpt of what he has to say about the Jewish scales at the time. He said, "Soviet musicology usually considers this harmonic minor resolving to the dominant." He was speaking about the klezmer scale that we all know as the Havaraba, and it's what gives it its Eastern or Oriental flavor. He says, "Soviet musicology usually considers this the harmonic minor resolving to the dominant. The sequence ascending from G is identified as C minor. This is incorrect." With that little statement, I mean, you see that you just didn't say that in Soviet Russia. And you don't say that the Soviets are incorrect. I think that by doing that, you see just a little hint of how he got himself into trouble. But he was absolutely right. It wasn't some Western-based harmonic minor system coming from Western musicology and theory that really didn't even occur until the age of the Renaissance. This is something much, much older that has been kept alive and is still flowing and is still alive to this day. So if you like, I'll play you something that's a little bit too live. Well, I've found among these recordings something that is very much a raw field recording. This particular piece is called Makatonim der Tisch. And do you have a translation for me that you...
Well, I thought it was Tish's is a plate.
Yeah, Tish's is your table. So it's a little music for the table. Just love the rough nature of this old recording. I mean, you can just hear the town band in the square. I mean, you know, there's no polish to this one at all. It's beautiful. I love it.
You must have had a ball going around collecting these.
Oh, you'd think. That's the job I want. I want for someone to pay for me to go around and record Klezmorum all over the world. Again, we're talking about the great Moshe Beregovsky. Upon his death, they discovered 1,000, just over 1,000 wax cylinder recordings of this very nature. This was kind of his source material for his transcriptions of klezmer music. He really did a very thorough job of trying to transcribe them exactly as he heard them, not trying to clean them up or turn them into classical music or...
Is that what he then wrote the music down?
And this
down?
Is then he wrote the music down, so he would have this recording.
And then put the notes to it.
Exactly the way he heard it. So this is what we're hearing, what his source was. You know, even for his time, there were people who paid attention to his work. The great Abe Schwartz, who was one of the first great American klezmorim, made some fantastic recordings of music that he collected, and the first one of Schwartz's that I'd like to play for you is Nachter Havdalah, or the night after Havdalah. So basically, this is the celebration at the end of Shabbat, and this is the great Abe Schwartz and his orchestra. You can have that right away. Thank you. Was the Abe Schwartz Orchestra playing Nach der Havala. Havdalah. And that was a recording made in New York in the 1930s. And that's on Columbia Records. That was really the, showing klezmer's really growth from Eastern Europe straight into America, where it prospered in New York. I'd like to send this out with a track by the Klezmer Conservatory Band, another piece of music that was collected by Moshe Beregovsky and in the mid-century in the Ukraine. And this is a Skochna, and this is the Klezmer Conservatory Band recorded in June of 1999.
And that was a fascinating journey through the history of Jewish music.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Carvin, for taking us on this wonderful journey. And if you've missed this program, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom. And thank you for listening again. We look forward to you listening next Sunday at 10 past 10. And we would like to thank our sponsor, Nature Bee.